Our guest today is Vivek Raman, former credit trader on Wall Street and a huge proponent of Ethereum. Vivek has worked at institutions such as Morgan Stanley and Deutsche Bank. He spent the last few years as a leading advocate for Ethereum and decentralized blockchain technology. He founded a startup called Etherealize, which is backed by the Ethereum Foundation, aiming to bridge the traditional finance world with decentralized finance on the Ethereum blockchain. So today we'll be talking about Vivek's company, Etherealize, his thoughts on AI in the crypto space, and the future for Ethereum. So thank you so much for coming on here. Can't wait to get into our conversation.
Of course. Thanks for having me. And that was a very kind introduction.
Course. So why don't you run me through your background a little bit first? So after spending nearly a decade as a trader, what was the moment where you felt like you needed to pivot and leave Wall Street? What was the moment where you saw a gap in the space and you wanted to pursue your road and journey into Ethereum?
Definitely. That's a it's a great starting point. Wall Street's one of the coolest places to work ever. The whole world's financial system, large, most of it trades through Wall Street. New York is the center of global finance. And so coming out of school in 2009, I saw this vibrant ecosystem where it's exciting, money's moving all the time, it's really fast paced. And so it was a no-brainer to go into Wall Street. It was also right after the financial crisis. So Wall Street was having a huge comeback from a pretty big shakeout. And yeah, it was the smartest people and the most energized people I'd ever seen in 2009. So I was like, I have to go work there. I worked there for over 10 years, four different banks: Morgan Stanley, UBS, Deutsche Bank, Nomura. And I kept moving around because I kept meeting incredible people at all those places, building an amazing network and learning how the financial system worked. But the one thing I traded a bunch of different credit products: high yield bonds, distressed bonds, loans. Credit default swaps, a lot of which were part of the 2008 crisis. So really esoteric items and really, really fast paced. But the one thing I saw is the whole system ran on Stone Age technology. So the technology backing Wall Street was pretty archaic, and people kind of take it for granted. They say, okay, this is just the way it is. The important parts the people, which is true. The important parts the relationships, which is true. But there was after 10 years, there was no technological innovation in a meaningful way. And that just started to feel a little bit boring after a while. Again, best people, best relationships. And also, a lot of the people started to move on. And the same talent that was there in 2009 wasn't there in 2019, 2020. So it's an industry that hadn't evolved when the whole world was becoming technological. Also, through from 2010 to 2020, you saw the FAANG companies rise. So a lot of the talent went to Facebook and Google and Amazon. So the tech space started to grow. And I felt a little bit of FOMO not being in the tech space. So I hit the eject button. I left New York City. I left Wall Street. It's very hard to do because it's an amazing network and amazing. But I moved to Austin. I was like, all right, I'm going to reinvent myself in tech. And the first thing I got introduced to in Austin, very serendipitously, was a group of people at the Ethereum Foundation working on this thing called Ethereum. And I was pretty late to that. Like that's it. I got in at 2020, 2021. Most people I met in crypto were there since the beginning, 2013, 2015. But the good part about getting in late is everyone else becomes like a crypto utopian diehard person saying that blockchains are gonna run the world. And I don't necessarily believe that. I saw Ethereum as a utility and an infrastructure and a tool that should ultimately merge with Wall Street. So I saw this technology solution. I came from the problem, which is Wall Street not upgrading their technology. And I was like, these two will eventually get married, Wall Street and blockchains. And the rest is history. I mean, I've been working on institutional adoption for Ethereum ever since and been trying to convince all players across Wall Street that blockchains should be where assets are represented digitally, they're traded, they settle, everything's more efficient that way. And it was 3 years of rejections because no one in the regulatory regime or institutional regime really wanted to use blockchains. Last year, all of them flipped a switch, and now the whole world is now open to blockchain adoption. I like to say that like Ethereum had its ChatGPT moment last year when it flipped from being in the shadows to suddenly becoming fully mainstream. And so that's why I'm here. We're trying to bring these two worlds together, and the worlds are both finally open to merging, and it's going to be a really cool technological evolution.
Cool. So I just wanted to start off very simple because I was kind of researching Ethereum and what you mean by kind of bridging the Wall Street space with Ethereum. So what is Ethereum? Like if you were to explain to a second grader, like what is Ethereum? Why is it important? And why is that the one thing that you think should be a technological innovation in Wall Street?
It's a great question. I think people get so caught up in the technology they're not able to explain it. Ethereum is very simple, and that's important. It is a place, a digital place, to have assets represented digitally and to store them and to have them be secure and to move them around. It sounds very simplistic, but it's actually really powerful because the world's made of assets. They're all physical assets, like tickets for concerts are physical assets. A stock or a bond is actually a physical asset. If you can represent that digitally and put it somewhere, then suddenly you can send assets, you can send money, you can trade things, you can program things. It's like the internet moment. Like before the internet, people used physical mail and they had to use a newspaper for their information. Once it was digitized, it was more accessible. It created this whole wave of innovation. Assets and money haven't been digitized yet, and blockchains allow assets and money to be digitized, put on a place that the whole world can see it, like the internet, and then interact with it. So that's a big unlock.
So you want to kind of tokenize real assets to transfer them more smoothly, if I'm understanding that right?
Transfer them more smoothly, to own them on this digital internet, to share them with each other, to program them. There's a lot of different ways. I mean, the best way is to give examples, but yes, that's the underlying premise, is that everything will be represented digitally in the future as well as physically. And so if everything is represented digitally, putting it all on one giant blockchain that's global, allows more access. So let's do examples. Money's the easiest. Right now, sending money from here to India to Japan takes days and has all these fees and bells and whistles and counterparties. If you represent money digitally, which is a stable coin, you can send that instantly anywhere in the world. That's a very obvious upgrade that should have happened a long time ago, and it's here now. Let's take something more esoteric and cooler. Concert tickets. They're really hard to track. They get duplicated sometimes. It's hard to know what's been used and not used. Issuing concert tickets on a blockchain, so you can't have duplicates on a blockchain. It's a permanent ledger of record. So you can't copy paste money. You can't copy paste assets. That's a really, really important feature of a blockchain. You can then distribute your tickets to all the different concert holders, and then they'll own that. They'll be able to show their one ticket to the venue when they're going in. It's also way easier to trade. You can create a marketplace, and if people want to sell it, you can do that very quickly and instantly. It's just a more efficient and cooler way to have commerce. It's like creating an economy with all the assets built in on the internet.
I mean, it reminds me of, I don't know if you remember this, but a few years ago, this AR thing was this huge thing of like artificial reality and having those like goggles that you would wear, and you had this whole life just digital, and you could like own houses and you could own all these little things, and it was like a whole kind of like you said, like a whole economy just like online, and it just reminded me of that.
That's exactly right. It's linking the physical economy and the digital economy, but it's allowing money and assets to travel, which is really, really powerful.
So pivoting to your company, Etherealize, I think based on what I've seen, it aims to be this institutional marketing proxy kind of for Ethereum, and you want it to educate Wall Street and banks about Ethereum. So are you positioning Ethereum as the go-to blockchain for Wall Street, and how are you using AI to achieve this business model, and is AI helping you?
AI will. Let's get to the AI stuff after, because AI is the ultimate use case, and AI is like where the world gets really sci-fi. But coming back to it, Ethereum's like the internet. The internet didn't have a sales force or a marketing force or a product arm. Like, it's not like the internet went out and convinced Facebook to use it or convinced companies to build on it. Blockchains are different because now everyone's built. There's hundreds of blockchains. There should be one institutional blockchain where all the assets live. It'd be like us having 15 15,000 different internets. If we had 15,000 different internets, I wouldn't be able to have the Zoom call with you. I'd be logged into my internet, you'd be logged into yours. So it's important as people adopt blockchains to show that you need a very, very secure, very, very global. We like to call it decentralized, but it just means a very secure blockchain that no one owns, everyone can access. That's the platform where assets should live. It's especially important because if you're going to put high value assets, if you're going to put all your money on a blockchain or put your high value like art or title to your car or house on a blockchain, it needs to be really secure and needs to be global, and it can't be controlled by a certain party. People don't understand that Ethereum is the only option there. There are a lot of other blockchains that are actually like more like companies that also go out there and pitch themselves. So we set up Etherealize and said, let's go educate Wall Street about Ethereum. Let's show them this whole ecosystem. Let's try and bring as many different banks and institutions and ultimately fintech and all different players and assets to this one place. Because once you have everything in one place, you can start to do all this magic of programmable assets and smart contracts and everyone interacting with everyone. So that's the world we're trying to create. And yeah, the moment to do it now is when the blockchain window is finally open. So that's the marketing education side we're doing for Ethereum. I'm happy to get the AI side too if you want. So we were in this like really just fortuitous time that we had the AI birth happen with ChatGPT, and we're having the blockchain birth happen with I don't know, the whole industry and regulations in the US adopting it right now. So you have two of the most fundamental technologies that both launched effectively and became mainstream and adopted within 2 years of each other. And the funniest part is they complement each other more than anyone can even imagine. So we've already seen the effects of ChatGPT and AI for information. So AI can gather anything, process insane information, spit it all out in condensed format, generate content. I mean, everyone uses it every single day, and it's absolutely crazy. The one thing AI can't do yet is transact on behalf of a person because there's of the inefficiency of the banking system. So like AI agents don't have bank accounts. They don't have access to Stripe's API, for example, because that has to go through a bunch of different banks. Now, all these players realize that if you have something that's permissionless and open, like an internet that has assets that anyone can access, well, then that allows for way more commerce. So AI agents can have their own bank accounts if they're on a blockchain. They actually can have their own assets if they're on a blockchain. They actually can transact. You can tell them to go shop for you or book your flights or something if it's on a blockchain. So the magical part is if you give AI agents access to money or a wallet on something like Ethereum, which is the open internet network, then it can start transacting on your behalf. And then AI gets really, really powerful. Then you can have AI just like automate your expenses and buy things when they go on sale and book your flights and that's where it gets really sci-fi. Arming AI with money is like the is where crypto and AI can converge.
But how do you prevent AI agents from just incessantly spending your money without your permission? I can see how that's very desirable in certain cases, but aren't there many issues with that?
There are, but I mean that's part of innovation. I mean we're creating new technologies. I mean one really easy way is you only give your AI agent a certain small amount of spending money, right? So I mean that's the simplest. If I only put $100 into an AI agent wallet and say go shop for me, it can only spend up to $100, and then it can learn from your behavior and then have I know it can set preferences that way. That's one. Blockchains are fairly, I mean, especially if you have big decentralized blockchains like Ethereum, they're very secure and I mean, they're not hackable, et cetera. So AI can't go pull money out of my account. You have to give access to it. You have to actually give it money. So there are pretty good safeguards. Like there's a way to make these symbiotic. But yeah, of course, I mean, with any new technology, like there'll be a learning curve, and the way to do that is to limit their scope, limit their ability to spend. But I think it's a technology. There are two technologies that need to converge because it unlocks the potential of both. Blockchains unlock the potential of AI, and AI unlocks the potential of blockchains too.
So Wall Street has historically viewed blockchains as a huge threat to the institution, Wall Street in general. So how are you negating these hesitations through your Etherealize education and your product development through your company?
I think the reason that Wall Street's been averse initially, banks know what blockchains are. They've all been building internal blockchains for 10 years. Like, blockchains are not new. I mean, the programmable blockchains, especially like Ethereum, came around 2014, 2015. So again, it's been 10 years. The reason banks didn't want to use them was because there's no regulatory clarity. I think that everyone, banks knew that this could help them cut costs. They can make more money. They can upgrade assets to the internet era. That's actually not the controversial part. The controversial part was we had a regulatory regime that was very punitive of using blockchains, because it's a technology that wasn't well understood and wasn't explained well. All that's now changing. So I actually think it's way more symbiotic. I don't think banks get replaced by blockchains. I don't think blockchains are like a one-stop solution that are going to like rewire everything and just disintermediate society. I just think it's very useful complementary technology, and everyone's ready for it to be finally used. But the regulatory, the regulatory overhang is now going away and becoming a tailwind, to the point where the regulators are saying we should use stable coins, we should use public blockchains, we should adopt this tech. And I think banks and everyone are rushing in now to adopt their to create their strategies there.
Are there any regulatory frameworks that you've kept intact and others you tried to avoid? And if so, which specific ideas or types?
Well, the cool part is like banks need Congress, and they need law to be written to actually have sustainable long-term frameworks. Just like the Dodd-Frank Act came out after the 2008 crisis, and it gave banks a playbook on how to navigate the industry after 2008. It was rules of the road, it was clear, and they followed that. Now we actually have two pieces of legislation for crypto, which is unprecedented because there used to be zero. One's around stable coins, because stable coins are can't put the genie back in the bottle. Dollars are now digitized and they're flowing around the world, so we should have a framework for it. And every single company recently that you can think of has announced some sort of plans for a stable coin. Walmart, Amazon, Uber, every single bank is looking at some sort of stable coin integration. Stripe, obviously. Shopify just integrated with Coinbase, with USDC stable coin. So like that genie's out of the bottle. Now we're going to get rules, and that's going to be, I mean, that's going to proliferate. The second thing is a market structure bill, just allowing people to know which blockchains they can use and not use, know how they can issue tokens. That's what'll unlock like real crypto innovation. And that's going through Congress right now. It'll hopefully pass. I got a chance to testify in front of all of Congress, which is ridiculous, on behalf
Wow.
of Ethereum last week, actually, or maybe 2 weeks ago. But that was really, really cool. But that was surreal, because if you had said 2 years ago that you'll be able to actually represent a blockchain in Congress, I mean, it would have
Yeah.
been laughing stock. And now suddenly, not only are they open to it, but got to go testify. So like it's been a real change, and that's why I'm so confident all this is gonna get adopted right
What
now.
specifically were you tested? I mean, what were you defending?
About the market structure bill. So I mean, the stablecoin bill is pretty well understood. The market structure bill, it was just congressional Q&A on why we need something like this. And the other people on the other people testifying alongside me were former at the CFTC, at the SEC. One was a general counsel, chief legal officer at a big trading protocol. I was there representing industry, saying that if we have rules of the road, if we have some sort of framework, there's going to be so much innovation, so many jobs in the US. It's the next big employment vehicle for, I don't know, your generation, for everyone that comes after. So we should be embracing this in the US, because US has been losing a lot of blockchain market share, and it's time to get that back. So that's the perspective I want to provide. And it's very nonpartisan. It's like it benefits both sides really, really well.
Yeah. So, as you mentioned before, you worked in AI alongside crypto. So, how do you see AI integrating with Ethereum's blockchain for specifically credit risk assessment or trading algorithms?
That's they're all really so background of what I did in AI is I was an investment banker also for a little while after trading, and what we did investment banking deals for were for data centers that were putting in NVIDIA GPUs, raising capital, and then just starting AI factories. And so that was really cool to see the infrastructure being
Yeah.
built that powers ChatGPT and everything. But ultimately, the thing that's bringing AI mainstream are the application layer. So the infrastructure is all being built, and the infrastructure is becoming commoditized. And now you have some giants like NVIDIA and CoreWeave, et cetera. But the application layer is where AI becomes truly cool. And I see the application layer of AI intersecting with the application layer on Ethereum, because if you have a public blockchain where assets can move and value can move, AI agents will come in and actually do that.
Like for you instead of
You have to give it permission. You have to give it permission. You have to give it your assets. But AI will use that on your behalf. We talked about the shopping example. If we want to bring it to Wall Street markets, then AI agents can also potentially trade. You can give it a set of rules. You can
yeah.
give it a set of criteria. You can give it a set of patterns. You can feed in data, which is where you came to on like the credit side, for example. You can feed a lot of different information to it and say, based on all this, here's what create a portfolio. Here's what I want to buy. Here's what I want to sell. And a lot of that should be done through AI and through bots and not through humans. So all that'll do is it'll increase the amount of activity and trading volume, and create new ideas and create new permutations. And it should cause markets to flourish. And humans can be more high level now and say, okay, let me come up with as many different strategies as possible. Let me have a whole swarm of AI agents that analyze things and do research for me and trade for me. And like, that's where, and then the commerce layer is on the blockchain. So these belong together in some sense. And again, I think it's important to say it's complementary to humans. It's arming us with new tools. It's not going to replace us.
Yeah. So in terms of humans, you kind of see humans more so overseeing the blockchain and how everything's going along, or how do you see humans taking part in this?
I mean, it's like you become more and more managerial, big picture. It's like AI agents right now are like having a really smart junior analyst.
Yeah.
So that doesn't get rid of the need for a senior person that can like direct AI to build. AI is not creative yet. I mean, who knows? If you go down a lot of rabbit holes, you can say, okay, maybe AI will just become self-generative and we'll just come up with all the ideas. I don't believe that's gonna be the case. I
Yeah.
think you're always gonna be limited by I don't know. I hope that's not the case at least. But like, I believe in the utopian world where it's very symbiotic, and humans can say, hey, I want to try exploring creating this kind of business. And then you have the AI agent do a market landscape analysis. You have another one set up your LLCs and pay for it and everything. You have another one, I don't know, handle your emails and outbound and inbound sales pipeline. And you get to do the overall strategy and try a bunch of experiments. And I just think having a lot of experimentation all the time is going to result in new innovation. And AI just turbocharges the ability to have innovation.
I mean, this is kind of off topic, but I'm curious still. Are you in favor of this whole pro AI world? Because I was talking to my dad and we were looking at the new Tesla robots that are being created. And I just find it to be so like corrupt almost. And to see a world where AI is going to dominate us at a certain point, and it feels a little scary to me. So I'm just curious about your opinion about that.
I think it's like any new, very, very disruptive technology. I think it's riskier than previous technologies. So we have to be really careful about it. I think the best minds in the world, like Elon Musk, knows that this is a threat, and
Yeah.
companies are building some of the bots. So clearly, like part of it is, can we have good rules of the road for AI, and can we design it correctly? But I'm always an optimist. I think if designed correctly, it's the most helpful tool to like help us turbocharge innovation and development. I think having, I don't know, having robot, if I had an AI robot in my house that was always cleaning and doing like the menial tasks, is that not just a strictly better world? There's a lot of ways it could go wrong, but
Yeah.
also a lot of ways it can go right and actually just like alleviate a lot of time and everything. Like there's a lot of jobs that should not be done by people, and that should free up people to do other cool jobs for industries that we probably haven't even created yet.
Yeah. Okay. Back to crypto.
No, it's all the same thing, but it's an
Yeah, it
important
is.
question.
Okay. With recent regulatory clarity and the new administration that's very crypto friendly, how do you see Ethereum's adoption evolve in the next 5 years, and what new opportunities do you see coming out of it?
I think Ethereum's going to start with institutional adoption from Wall Street. I think that's the clearest product market fit is for high value Wall Street assets to be represented digitally on Ethereum and then traded by everyone in the on the Wall Street ecosystem. And Ethereum just becomes a backbone. It becomes the internet that the financial system uses. So that's the start. How does that start to get really cool? Well, if assets all go on the public internet, that means more and more people can access it. So in the next phase, you'll have people all over the world at consumer level that can also have access to Wall Street tools. So you can actually the same kind of like yield instruments and cool specialized financial infrastructure that typically only institutions have access to. Now blockchain is going to open up access to everyone. So I can invest in a slice of a building I want to invest in, and I can own a fraction of a piece of art that's really or I can start having like royalties in an artist's music stream. Like all that stuff becomes possible with blockchains. So that's the next iteration. The iteration after that is when you have AI agents, like we talked about, that can actually transact and do commerce on behalf of people. So then you have AI actually using the blockchain and paying for things on behalf of people. And the fourth is where like you have complete new economies being created on chain. So like people will create music, and then you launch the music digitally native, and you have forever payment streams going to the creator of that music. A
Right.
book can be launched natively on chain. There are going to be like 100 books that are authentic, so that they have really high value. And then every time it's traded, you can have royalties go to the person that owns that book. So like just you, everyone can have their own businesses because of what blockchains enable. Everyone will just be like creating content and monetizing and generating it all on blockchain. Like that's I think how you have a fully digital economy.
Wow. Okay, so what do you think is one podcast or book, your choice, people can listen to in order to learn more about what you're talking about and what you're so passionate about?
That's hard. I mean, there hasn't been that much clear crypto content per se, which is why there's an opportunity, which is exactly why we built Etherealize and work. We wrote a 40-page very accessible piece on what Ethereum and what ETH the asset is. So that's one starting point. It's out for the world. It's at ethdigitaloil.com. So that's one. That's just like a big primer, which is effectively a small book on ETH. But consumer level, it's hard. I think all the content has to be still written, and the use cases still have to be found. And we're at the point just before all that happens. So that's why I think there's such a big opportunity for the space. But podcasts and Bankless is very, very good. That's how I got into the ecosystem. Again, there aren't a lot of crypto books, but the closest to Liar's Poker of crypto is this book called Crypto Confidential, written by my friend and really good author Nat Eliason. So there's resources. They're hard to find, and soon they'll be everywhere. So
Amazing. And where can people find you if they want to listen to more of your opinions?
think the world now lives on the crypto world lives on Twitter or X. So Vivek Ventures is my X profile. That's where we put out all our content and ideas and brainstorm and go from there.
Okay, Vivek, thank you so much for coming on here today.
Of
Amazing.
course. Great seeing you, and thanks for having me.
Of course.